The Subcommittee on Human Services will come to order. We will continue our agenda from yesterday, Senate Bill 5600. Today we will be dealing with senior and people with disabilities portion of the Senate DHS budget bill, and we will ask Mr. Britton to give us...
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll hand out the memo and the spreadsheet.
Great.
You have that in front of you already.
Thank you.
No. No. They found this legislator today. You sound like a legislator.
You guys sound like legislators today. Ladies and gentlemen, we are in committee. May I ask you to carry your socializing outside while we presume with our business of the day? You're beginning to sound like legislators.
This isn't the floor of the Senate, is it?
That's right. I thought it was the floor of the Senate at one time. Thank you, Mr. Britton.
Madam Chair, looking briefly at the memo, which we'll go over, you can see that like the earlier days when we talked about the particular budget clusters within the Department of Human Services, this memo indicates that we will be making changes to the governor's recommended budget based upon changes that were submitted by the Department of Human Services in their department-wide reshoot of the governor's budget. And those reshoot issues, by and large, are issues carried forward from the recent 2003-05 rebalance actions contained in House Bill 5077. They include corrections. Okay.
I'd like the committee to stand at ease until our friends get the information they need.
The reshoot also includes corrections or updated costs for policy packages in the governor's budget, and you'll be seeing a fair number of those within the senior and people with disabilities spreadsheets that we'll go over in a moment. And it includes technical adjustments and transfers that change each cluster's budget but have no net fiscal impact for the department as a whole. It will also include technical changes made to all budgets for reductions in the PERS rate and the hourly rate for the Department of Justice attorneys. It includes Senate, that should read Senate budget actions, that reduce general fund services and supplies expenditures by 2% and delay cost of living adjustment increases by 6 months. And it includes some other changes as recommended by the Legislative Fiscal Office analyst. If you flip over the memo to the back, you'll see that we have the appropriation bill amendment at the top of the page. Our plan, as you indicated, Madam Chair, is to present you conceptual amendments after our preliminary work sessions are done, and they are going, hopefully, to be concluded today. At which time, with your indulgence, we'll take a short recess and come back with all the numbers, the budget notes, and the conceptual amendment for you to see. And if it is your pleasure, to pass on to the full committee as amended. There is one performance measurement that I am recommending you at least look at. which is performance measurement 15, which is a percentage of persons with disabilities who are re-abused within 12 months of the first substantiated abuse. And I'll get to that after we're done with the spreadsheet. There's one budget note as outlined here on the memo. And finally, again, subcommittee action would be to approve a preliminary budget for the SPD area. With that, I would turn to the spreadsheet and walk you through it. Again, this starts with the 2005-07 governor's recommended budget on line one, $728,684,569 million general fund, $2.2 billion total funds, 1,968 positions, and 1,921.71 FTE. And I would call your attention to the top of page three. You'll see a solid line drawn across there. And on line 47 is the total reshoot adjustment as submitted by the Department of Human Services, an addition to this budget cluster from the governor's recommended budget of $91.7 million general fund, $171.6 million total funds, 100 positions, 8.4 FTE.
Then 91.7 is in addition to the GRB.
Madam Chair and Senator Westland, that's correct. That's the reshoot addition to the governor's recommended budget. Then are a series of adjustments to get to the Senate budget for the seniors and people with disabilities cluster. They total down on line 63, $23.8 million of general fund. And as I said, we'll walk through each of these line items. So with that, I'd go back to line two and begin with nursing facility caseload and costs. When the budget was put together, this was appeared to some to be fairly low in terms of its cost, caseload in particular, and this is an adjustment to that caseload based on the latest forecast, which includes actual information. And it would add $10.4 million general fund. And you can see with most of these, and including this one, the related federal match for this particular caseload. Second line is similar. This is community facilities. These include assisted living facilities, adult foster homes, residential care facilities. Again, a change in the caseload and cost estimate, $6.9 million general fund, $11.1 federal funds. Lines 4 and 5 are, again, caseload projection changes, cost changes in the hourly home care worker program and the live-in home care worker program. Line 4 shows an addition of $6.9 million general fund. The other fund limitation is to allow for client contributions to be made and to be spent in this particular budget of $21,808. And again, the federal match to those two state funding sources.
Mr. Vinicius. In the event there are questions, I'd like to entertain them as we go.
Thank you.
Comments as well.
Likewise, the live-in home care worker program caseload cost changes include an addition of general fund of $2.4 million, $135,000 other funds, and related federal match. Line 6 is a correction of the DD-mandated caseload changes that were already included in the November 2004 rebalance, but presumably not rolled forward in the governor's recommended budget, and they need to be included. So there's an addition here of $4.7 million general fund to make that particular correction.
I don't have the number available with me. What did we do for this community, DD and Oakdale? Do you remember that? Do you guys know?
Madam Chair and members, I don't know exactly the answer to that. There are certain caseloads within the services for developmentally disabled people, and my understanding is that this would fully fund the mandated caseload, the required caseloads under Medicaid. Line 7, other in-home care, ancillary services, some meals, and in-home agency costs, $142,000 general fund. Line 8 is a correction to nursing facility rates. When the governor's recommended budget was put together, there was an estimate of what the actual costs were going to be in terms of an increase. And since then, newer information, audited cost information, and this would correct those rates by adding $2.5 million general fund. The other fund's limitation is an addition of nursing facility provider tax funding. Line 9 is a Real Choices Systems grant, some federal funds limitation increase to allow for the expenditure of those federal dollars, $689,000.
What's Real Choices, Mr. President?
Madam Chair, I'm not entirely sure. Like all federal grants...
I didn't
grants,
hear the question.
What is Real Choices? The agency can answer that question, I'm sure, but this was a federal grant that was approved at some point by the emergency board. And if I dug around, I could probably find the information for you, but I can't off the top of my head. Line 10 is the general fund backfill of an incorrect revenue projection. This was a significant rebalance issue, and this is the roll-up from the rebalance. You'll recall in House Bill 5077 that we added a budget note that directed the department to come back with a full review of the other funds' revenue and expenditure limitation within the seniors and people with disabilities cluster. But again, this is the roll-up of from the rebalance to correct what was perceived as actual revenue, and it is not actually there. So this is a general fund backfill of empty other funds expenditure limitation.
Wow.
Line 11 was also mentioned in the rebalance discussion. This is to add 12 positions, 12 FTE, to do more presumptive Medicaid disability determinations. When a person presents themselves as a person with a disability, they are presumed eligible if they meet certain requirements. And since OHP standard has closed to new enrollment, we've seen this number of people presenting themselves as disabled go up significantly. This is staff to make those adjudications and determinations so that these folks can become eligible for Medicaid, OHP.
John, can we go back to 10 just for a second?
Sure.
Well, this kind of taken me by surprise. Maybe I should have seen this before. This was in the governor's expected source of revenue for this. Is that what you're telling me?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, what was in the governor's budget was the expectation that there was at least, in this instance, about $19 million of true other funds revenue that was coming into the department. And when they took a hard look at that, they determined that, no, there wasn't actual revenue coming in, that this was, in fact, empty expenditure limitation.
Was this MUPL money primarily?
It was MUPL limitations. That was some of it, and there were some other sources, as I recall, as well. But, yes, it had to do with MUPL expenditure limitation.
Can we expect any further MUPL problems in this budget?
Well, I hope not. Madam Chair and Senator Bates. I think we've cleaned it all out, but that would be a good question for the department to respond to.
Mr. Johnson.
Uh-oh. Penny, why are you getting it?
Well, Johnson's coming, so I agree.
For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Brian Johnston, interim director of the department. There is a payment in this budget that is booked in at approximately $14.5 million, which closes off.
No. Please speak. I'm sorry, but that's... Go ahead.
And overall in the department's budget that we're looking at, but that will resolve the MUPL issue for us. And I think that LFO staff has a better take of it.
I apologize. The $14.5 million is not in this particular budget, but this has to do with MUPL expenditure limitation that was originally in the 03-05 budget and got rolled up wrongly so. And it was mistaken to be actual revenue, and it isn't.
Right. I don't mean by that 14.5 is in the budget we're currently looking at. It's not part of that, but it's part of the overall MUPL, which was, I thought, Senator Bates' question.
Yes. When did we become aware of this during the reshoot?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, this was a rebalance issue for 0305 initially, and then this is the roll up from 0305 into the 0507 budget.
So the mistake was in the fact that it was viewed as being a revenue issue, a revenue source.
Madam Chair, that's exactly right.
It was.
The number was viewed as true revenue.
Right.
And there wasn't true revenue, and expenditure limitation is obviously different than actual revenue. So,
i.e., big mistake. Senator
Bates.
Stop it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee and department, the line 10 can be characterized in a lot of ways, and one of the ways, in an accurate way, is it's a simple mistake, and that's fine, except that when you consider, and correct me if I've got my numbers a little wrong here, John, the true reshoot dollar value was right at $66 million. Of that $66 million, $56 million of it was mistakes. Is that an accurate character? FMAP rates, MUPL.
Madam Chair and Senator Westland, there were a number of mistakes in the governor's recommended budget associated with this cluster, and this is one of them. Honest mistakes. I don't think anybody was trying to do anything wrong.
Mr. Britton, we're not talking about honest versus dishonest. We're talking about correction, and that's what I think this committee is saying to you,
yeah.
Mr. Johnston, that we're hoping that these, you know, we know that we will probably never be, with human error, we will never be totally mistake-free, but these are pretty big amounts, and it messes up the whole budgetary activity. As I know, a lot of the other people here are thinking, well, my God, why are we paying for their mistakes when we have problems in our own areas? We have problems with ALPS. We have problems with nursing home facilities. And these people are wondering why they can't. And so we have to come back and pay for mistakes. And that's what's going on. Senator Weston, continue.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With no judgmental parameters put on these, that's why I said you can call them a lot of things, but what they are is mistakes. And to the department's credit, most of them were in seniors and people with disabilities, and to the department's credit, James immediately came to me. I know Brian has come to me and said, we've got to figure this out and we need your help. And so I appreciate those offers and observations, but it still remains that, as has been presented, these mistakes will be put on the backs. You know, we're being asked, in essence, to put these these mistakes on the backs of some of Oregon's most frail and vulnerable human beings. And I'm not satisfied with that. And if I vote no today, Madam Chair, that is the reason why. I don't like the fact that the reshoot plan comes back and puts these mistakes, well-intended as they are, or not intended, on the backs of some of the most frail and vulnerable citizens that we have in the state. That is not acceptable to me. And again, I appreciate very much your immediate response when this was first presented. That's the way to do business. But it's not the way to do business, and that these mistakes, you know, are transferred to the people that they're intended to serve. Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the comments. Mr. Bitton.
I'm going to continue now, Madam Chair, with line 12. This is a correction of a duplicative cut to children with developmental disabilities, intensive in-home support program, and the omission of some costs. The governor's budget included a reduction of about $1.4 million, as I recall, and two times. So we're adding back $1.4, and in addition, there was the omission of some particular costs that do go into the Children's Intensive In-Home Support Program of about another $400,000. Hence, the add-back of general fund of $1.8 million, line 12. For the developmentally disabled foster homes, the governor's recommended budget, this is line 13, used a 5% vacancy rate, which is proven to be too high, and this was a reduction in the governor's budget. The actual rate is about 3%, so the difference in those two rates in terms of a reduction is added back here about $800,000 of general fund. Line 14 is a correction of the FMAP, the federal matching rate used in the governor's recommended budget, as well as a slight decrease in local match for developmental disability services, other funds revenue. You'll see down below the use of new information related to the FMAP, but this is to actually true it up to the federal match rate that was used throughout the governor's budget, Medicaid match rate.
So the governor's budget was 5 point, whatever, these $1 million less than what is shown here, and that's why we have to come back.
Madam Chair, that's correct. But you'll see down below, we'll get to it in a moment, the use of new, better information that was released since the governor's recommended budget was published on December 1st. On line 15 is the impact of closing the Oregon State Hospital geropsychiatric ward. We talked about this yesterday, and you can see that the cost in this system, the seniors and people with disability system, would be $3.8 million. The savings over in health services was about $3 million. Now, again, this particular one will be removed because the department is not going to be closing the geropsychiatric ward. So you'll see down on line 44 the removal of $3.8 million general fund. A similar situation pertains to line 16. This shows the add in general fund of $1.7 million, and it is the estimated impact of removing OHP adult dental. And the department indicated that if at least emergency dental was added back to the Oregon Health Plan, that this is a cost that would be avoided. We have done that in the health services side of things, and this cost of 1.7 is removed as well down below.
Well, just a second. Adult dental, if we were to add in complete adult dental, completely restore adult dental, would there be savings in this budget above this?
Senator Bates, no, there would not be.
So this saves emergency but nothing else?
The OHP add back saved emergency. It added back emergency dental, and that was what this particular
But if you were to add back on the other budget the entire dental package,
you don't get more savings here. No.
Do you think you're saving money just in emergency extractions of teeth?
I think that's right, Senator Bates.
Has that been vetted completely? It would seem to me that preventative care is going to save you some money over there.
It may very well. The department, again, indicated that the savings of 1.7, which, again, you'll see below,
I understand that.
Was predicated on the add back of emergency dental, which we've done.
But I'd like to ask the question, if we were to add back the entire dental package in OHP, of how that would affect this budget if we had the entire package back, not just the emergency package. Maybe we get that number back later on.
Okay.
But I heard you, Madam Chair, I heard the answer to your first question, which I don't understand, from John, was that if we add back the whole dental package, we don't save any additional money here.
There's no thing above the 1.7 being saved. And it just seems it seems intuitive to me that if you add back an entire dental package, there should be further savings. You're going to have less people needing emergent care. You'll have better hygiene. You'll have less infections. You'll have less emergency room visits. It seems like there's a savings there for doing what we do in dental care. And I think that should be calculated in. It might change your cost in OHP, might save your cost in this budget here.
I think part of the answer might be is that both budgets anticipate getting back to what's considered the emergency, true emergency level. So,
but what I'm asking, if we go past that,
I hear you.
Do we save over here?
Right. And
okay.
John, in his best guesstimate,
is that we don't.
Guesstimating right now, but by the time we get done educating him, you know, his guesstimates will be more precise.
Yes, might be about $2 million.
Senator Bates and Senator Wesson, those aren't my guesses. That's just what was reported to me from the department.
Thank you.
Guess what, Mr. Biden?
Yes.
Have no fear.
I have no fear. It's not about this. Maybe I should, but lines 17, 18, and 19 all relate to the Medicare Modernization Act, and these are costs related to that act and the implementation of that particular act. And you can see the addition of a number of staff and FTE associated with that. Line 17, which relates to policy option package 110, additional eligibility workers for low-income subsidies for Part D. Again, we anticipate a fair number of people coming and requesting an adjudication of their eligibility for a low-income subsidy for the Medicare Modernization Act Part D benefit. Yes.
Aren't most of these people cross-trained that people can leave from one area of work and go to another area of work so that you don't have to continue to be hiring so many people, or different people?
Well, Madam Chair, that may be the case, but again, this is an additional workload that's anticipated. So where they actually hire these people from or whether they move them from other parts of the agency, again, they are estimating the need for 29 new positions and the associated FTE. But this is a fairly extensive workload that they anticipate related to people seeking eligibility for the low-income subsidy.
Madam Chair, how long do you expect these limited duration positions there to be there?
Well, the positions themselves, Senator Bates, will be there the entire biennium, but the FTE indicates to me roughly a third of the biennium, so maybe 8-9 months or so.
During the transition.
That's correct, Senator Bates.
Okay.
Likewise, line 18 is some continuation of temporary workers to staff toll-free phones, four positions, 1.32 FTE. We saw that in the rebalance. Line 19 is the ongoing staffing needs to handle an estimated woodwork effect from the Medicare Modernization Act. on food stamps, Oregon Health Plan, and long-term care. I'll also note here that there's some backfilling fewer projected estate recoveries of the clawback. And we dealt with this issue yesterday in Senate Bill 1088. But even so, the estimated estate recoveries from the clawback are lower by $845,000 than would otherwise be expected from the Oregon Health Plan estate recoveries.
Why is that?
First of all, because the clawback amount is less than the Medicaid amount, but also the state share is somewhat lower as well. Line 20, disabled adult children offset income. This is where...
Madam Chair.
Senator Weston.
I apologize. I want to go back to the MMA lines. And, you know, while I'm...
718?
Well, 17, 18, and 19. And while I'm castigating, sincerely castigating the agency on some mistakes, I either want to compliment them or just express concern over the MMA costs. I know it's money. I'm just concerned. You know, we're getting into, they're getting into an area, you know, where, quote, no man has gone before type of thing. I'm just concerned about these line items, all three of these line items. And if whoever the appropriate person is from the department could come talk to me. You know, I'm worried these aren't high enough. I wish they were lower. I compliment you for keeping them as low as you did. But that's just something I don't want to come up and bite us.
Mr. Johnson, do you have someone you want to come?
But you mean do it after the committee?
I'll send the appropriate parties.
Okay.
Excuse me. Thank you.
Line 20, this is related to adult children who have developmental disabilities, and they are working and earning income. However, much of that income is typically used to provide for their care. And this was a ruling by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services that doing that with respect to these particular adults was incorrect. We should not be doing it. We had a Department of Justice, an Oregon Department of Justice opinion to the contrary, but the department now believes that CMS is correct, and this is backfilling that money, returning it.
So we should not have been taking the majority of the dollars that they make from their workplace.
That is my understanding, Senator Carter, yes.
And that's why it's nearly $1 million.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Any questions thus far?
That was one of those things that came out of the special sessions.
Mm-hmm.
Line 21 is to add a rate increase for the Providence Elder Place. This was added at the November Emergency Board in a departmental rebalance. However, it was not added into the governor's recommended budget, and this would do that.
Now, why is this place so specified, aren't there? Was their rate lower than any of the other organizations in the same area of work? Was there any difference?
I can't answer that question, Senator Carter. These are not cost-based rates, particularly for Elder Place. The November Emergency Board was faced with that very question, or faced with a question of whether to increase these particular rates, and they decided to go along with that.
Thanks. Senator Bates, Senator Weston. I don't know.
Okay.
See, if you let me sit down next to him, then all you have to do is go.
There's a reason she has that far away.
I was just going to ask that if we could have someone from the department come up to discuss this.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, James Tate from the Department of Human Services. Very quickly, when we looked at this rate issue, Elder Place is a Medicaid, Medicare, it's a capitated rate. They have full responsibility for all acute care and long-term care, all bundled, the whole range. And it's an all-inclusive program for the elderly and has a special category of regulation and licensure from the federal government. So it's a Medicare-Medicaid combination. We pay for the long-term care portion of that, and as we discussed with them over multiple years, there had been long-term care rate increases for particular providers across the board from 99 on, whereas their long-term care rate had been held flat. They have to go out and purchase services from adult foster care, from residential care facilities, and other providers like that. And the rates kept increasing over here, but as part of the capitated rate, it was flat over here and was running into major cost problems for them. That was why we came to the November Emergency Board and proposed a rate increase. We also compared the PACE rates to similar facilities across the country and found, percentage-wise, I don't have it with me, we did the research on that, it seemed to be quite a bit lower than equivalent programs in other parts of the country.
So, Mr. Taves, there is no other organization in our state similar to Elder Place and whose cost did not go up equal to theirs?
Madam Chair, correct. PACE is the only program of its type, an all-inclusive program for both acute care and long-term care. And, yes, the long-term care rates for particular providers had increased in other places but been held flat as part of the capitated rate for the PACE program.
Senator Westline?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions. And one deals with how do we document the acuity level of the individuals at PACE? I mean, I love the model. I think it's great, and it could hold some long-term value for us if it could be implemented statewide. But one, how do we determine that acuity level? They are getting, from my understanding, a higher reimbursement rate than other assisted living senior facilities. So if that's the case, how is that justified, number one? And number two, what has been the caseload growth in the PACE program over the last 4, 5, 6, 7 years?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Westland, I can't give you the latter off the top of my head. I think there are about, 550 now is roughly the enrollment for the PACE program, but how that compares to 4 or 5 years ago, we can get that for you for very, very quickly. And we have actually done cross-comparisons of acuity in other parts of our long-term care system versus PACE. And we can dig that data up as well, because I know there have been concerns expressed before that they serve people with lesser needs. That's not been our finding, and again, they bear the full risk within that capitated rate. But I think we've looked at acuity measures before, and we can certainly pull that up again.
Great experiment. Okay. I would appreciate it.
And Madam Chair and Senator Weston, I should say, I think we've talked before. I mean, this is a model outside of PACE that we want to look for all of Medicaid and for the future, looking for particularly people with chronic diseases, how we can bundle long-term care and acute care in a capitated rate kind of manner. So it's an important model that we need to extrapolate into other areas.
Yeah, and the hospital is an important component of that. I mean, I understand that. And so, I mean, when we're starting to talk about, and here's what I don't understand, one of the things I don't understand about, you talk about assuming the risk, kind of the bedrock fundamental concept of managed care. If that risk gets too great in Elder Place, it can be shifted to the hospital. Yes or no?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Weston, I don't believe so. I mean, the rate is bundled across both acute and long-term care, and they're responsible for the full. I mean, one of the impressive things about their data is they have a very, very low rate of hospitalization compared to the general population of people served in that category. And I think that's part of the theory where they make up some of the the savings on the acute care side. But no, it's a bundled and capitated rate.
Okay.
Dr. Bates? Madam Chair, I'm just going to make a comment here following on Senator Westland. This is the kind of discussion we should have spent 2 or 3 days on. This particular program is a wonderful, from one point of view, a wonderful experiment in how we deal with the problems of aging, long-term and chronic illnesses, acute illnesses, health care, and how they're interrelated with how we live every day as we age. I'm glad we have this in the state, not only for the people who live there, but because it may leave the rest of us in an area that may help us deal with some of our long-term problems. We have not had that discussion except for just right now. This is probably it for this session. And I would tell you that the splitting of ways and means and the method we've gone about doing this has made this almost an irrelevant session in some ways, and I'm really saddened by that. I'm very fearful we're going to make mistakes in these budgets that are going to hurt people, and we won't be aware of it until 6 months or a year from now. So this is more of a comment than anything else.
Well, I'm not guilty.
I'm not accusing you, okay? What I'm saying is I want it done differently in next session. This is terrible what we're doing. The other issues involved this all the way down this list, these are things we're seeing for the first time for a great deal of us, and we're trying to wade through very complex situations. And I think we're going to find other holes and other things we're going to have questions about as we go through here today. And it saddens me that we're doing it this way. I'm glad we're doing this much, but I wish we were doing a lot more.
Thank you, Mr. Tate.
Thanks.
Mr. Bidden?
Moving on, Madam Chair, line 22, correction of the Oregon Supplemental Income Program caseload roll-up. Again, this was an issue in the November e-board rebalance that needed to be added into the governor's budget, and it is being done so here on line 22. Line 23 is the correction of the Oregon Project Independence reduction in the governor's recommended budget. This add of 6.2 would take the level back up to about 3.9. You'll recall that in the governor's recommended budget that there was more taken out of the budget than was in the program to begin with. And the addition of 6.2 takes this again back to a level of about $3.9 million. You'll see an additional add below when we get to the Senate budget adjustments. Line 24 is the removal of about $500,000 of federal funds expenditure limitation that was deemed as unnecessary in this budget. Line 25 is a partial add back of the general assistance program. The governor's recommended budget assumed 24-month savings. This assumes that it will not be closed on July 1st of 2005, but that it would be closed 3 months later, and that cost is about $800,000 of general fund. Line 26 is a correction of a reduction within the governor's recommended budget associated with the personal care portion of this budget. It would add $1.9 million general fund.
Can we go back to 25 just for a minute?
Sure.
This is 24 positions.
28
positions. Mm-hmm. And these people, for doing general assistance, you have to determine, these are people who are also applying for SSI, correct?
Yes, Senator.
But the general assistance just hold them over until they qualify.
So, I mean, you have a certain number going through for SSI. I may be wrong. You have a certain number going through for SSI. They have to get general assistance, they have to apply for SSI. The work has to be done to get them ready for that. Why do we need to add 28 positions in?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, I'm not entirely sure of that. This is the reduction that was in the governor's recommended budget when the program was eliminated, 28 positions. I will tell you that we've asked the department to provide information about general assistance and haven't received it yet. We had this same discussion over on the House side because there was considerable concern about the elimination of this particular program.
I'm just not convinced you can't have the I think you can still have the program, but possibly not have to add in people. You're going to have to do this work anyway for SSI. and I believe it's probably the same work you do for G8 at the same time. I'm not sure why you need the extra people.
Yeah.
You're talking 28 positions, but 3.5 FTE.
For 3 months. But, Senator, if I could, first of all, the determination of eligibility for SSI is conducted by a different outfit that is within Seniors and People with Disabilities, but it is not these 28 positions. What I've been told is that these are needed for other kinds of benefit determination and case management. So,
okay.
But I would ask if you would like the department to talk to you directly about general assistance, I'm sure they could do that.
Thanks.
Mr. Johnston, you don't need to come up, but our intent here, and our intent as well as our concerns have been that these are the most vulnerable. And if we use all the money, tile the money up into employee salaries, and the programmatic side of that suffers. And
That's right. And
what is the difference between those skill levels that a person uses in helping the general assistance people, as well as those that are associated with SSI, even though Mr. Britton just got through saying this is a different set of people. But somewhere along the line, how can the department handle some of this expertise within the department's budget already in order for us to get more money to a most vulnerable group of people? And that's what our intent is. Talk about it within the department and get back to them in a couple of days. I'd appreciate that.
Line 27, again, this was another reduction in the governor's recommended budget. It assumed 24 months worth of savings by eliminating the employment initiative. This assumes that 3 months are added back. Line 28 has to do with the Agency with Choice for Home Care Workers program. This was a reduction of exactly $9.1 million general fund in the governor's budget, and the department asked me to read the description in their tracker, which I will be able to do. GRB assumed all 12,000 home care workers would be shifted to Agency with Choice administrative structures by January 2006, which assumed projected savings in DHS staff costs and slightly decreased workers' compensation and unemployment insurance costs. After follow-up research by DAS Labor Relations and the Attorney General, it has been determined that new worker qualifications in pre-employment screening is a mandatory bargaining right for existing workers. Therefore, the Agency with Choice model could only apply to new home care workers, and as such must be phased in over several years, thereby reducing 05-07 expenditures. So my cryptic description, not able to do Agency with Choice for Home Care Workers program, there's a little more to it than that. But the bottom line is that it would add back this reduction of $9.1 million general fund.
So as new workers come in, they're going to be under Agents of Choice?
Senator Bates, I don't know if that will happen or not unless this model is actually adopted. And I have not heard that it has been or hasn't been, so I don't know. Line 29 is the repricing of the relative adult foster care cut. This was eliminated this particular part of long-term care, or this particular option within long-term care. And the overall cut in the governor's recommended budget was about $23 million of general fund. Since correcting it and repricing it, the department has determined that the cut would not be worth $23 million, but more like about $9.9 million, and this is an add back of the difference. So this does not restore relative adult foster care as an option in long term care, but it reprices it and adds money back. Likewise, line 30 is a repricing of the adult and people with disabilities home and community-based care services waiver cap. Again, this was another reduction in the governor's budget of about $7.6 million. This repricing, based on new caseloads and the like, would add back $5.5 million. Again, this isn't the entire add back, and it would still, under the governor's reshoot budget, still put in a waiver cap, but you'll see a change to that in the Senate add backs, a little bit lower on the spreadsheet. Line 31 is a reshoot of the mandated caseload for developmentally disabled persons, adds $1.7 million general fund. Line 32, this continues something that had already occurred in 2003-05, and that was to eliminate state positions because they are being assumed by a transfer area agency on aging. So this effectively transfers 78 positions, 77.43 FTE, but they are no longer state employees under this proposal.
Yeah.
Line.
Madam Chair.
Dr. Bates.
Question on 32. Will this make the gap between state workers and county or not-for-profits even wider when this actually occurs? We've got a problem in AAA's there already. Does this actually affect that?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, it doesn't affect it on day one, but down the road,
it does. Yes, same erosion will occur?
Yes, it would. Line 33 is a proposal to use some supplemental security income, SSI recoveries, and general assistance in the Oregon Supplemental Income Program to replace general fund. I would point out that under normal circumstances, if the general assistance program were to be continued, these recoveries would be associated with that program. But in any case, this is other funds revenue that is being used to replace general fund. So it needs to be taken into account if the general assistance program were to be added back at some point. Line 34, lower caseloads in the spousal pay program and independent choices waiver program leads to some general fund savings, about $83,000. Line 35 is a projected lower personal care caseload, $519,000 general fund. Also, on line 36, Oregon Supplemental Income Program cost per case is projected to be lower than it was in the governor's recommended budget, saving about $2.4 million general fund.
Mr. Fitton, if we were to, and we're still working on it, trying to get general assistance dollars back into the budget, that means we'd have to anticipate this $542 million being a part of that.
Yes, Madam Chair. What I'm trying to say is that we're using in this proposal, again, because the governor's budget eliminates general assistance, there are some residual recoveries that will still be coming back to the department if that program were to be closed, to the tune of about $543,000 here. So if general assistance were added back, these recoveries would be associated with that program, but it would still leave a general fund hole in the OSIP program of $543,000.
Gotcha.
So it has to be taken into account.
This is such a revolving account.
The other funds recoveries.
Yeah, put GA back in, it becomes a revolving account like it always has been.
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, yes, although the general fund, we attempted to do that 2 years ago, and the general fund, I think, is still a necessary part of this particular program, particularly for the staffing costs associated with it.
Further question?
I got it covered.
On line 37, There are some unanticipated settlement recoveries in the Developmental Disability Services System, $6.8 million of recoveries used to backfill general fund. Line 38 is to simply remove some of the empty.
Madam Chair, where did that come from? The line 37?
I'd have to refer you to the agency.
Okay. Moving, come talk to me later. Not now.
Line 38 is other funds, some empty expenditure limitation that is truly empty and doesn't need to be backfilled with general fund. $1.3 million reduction in other funds limitation. Line 39 is an overall reshoot of the adults and people with disabilities staffing, resulting in savings of about $5 million general fund. I believe this was done in association with the staffing study. I'm not entirely sure of that, but that's my belief. Line 40, this was a reduction within the governor's recommended budget. A further look revealed a little bit more additional housing fund savings from some early debt repayment, saving another $125,000 of general fund. Line 41 is the federal match rate change with new federal information. There is, again, a little bit of lower developmental disability system local match revenue, but this saves about $3.2 million general fund. Similar adjustments in lines 42 and 43, FMAP changes for Eastern Oregon Training Center and state-operated community programs for persons with developmental disabilities.
Madam Chair.
Senator Watson.
Small question, John, but what's it on line 41? Would the FMAP adjustment, where do we pick up that 23.3 other funds? What is that?
Madam Chair and Senator Westland, that is a local match from developmental disability system providers or county providers. And it just simply means that they do not have to contribute as much to, because it's being replaced with federal funds.
To do this. Okay, I got it.
You okay?
I'm good.
Okay.
Line 44 is to remove the impact of closing the Jarrow Psychiatric Ward. Again, this was on line 15 above to add $3.8 million. Because we're not closing the ward, this is taken out in line 44. Line 45 on the next page.
John, let me ask one question.
Sure.
Are we going to talk about medical supplies or DMEs in this budget at all?
Madam Chair, no, we're not.
It's
in the health services budget area that we talked about yesterday. Yes.
Well, that'll bite the apple. Mm-hmm.
Line 45 is a slight reduction in general fund of one of the governor's recommended budget reductions that restructured ALF, assisted living facility, and adult foster home rates of about $36,000. So this is a repricing of that reduction that generated a slight amount more of savings. Line 46 combines a variety of various technical adjustments. Again, the agency totals is zero, but for this particular cluster, this would add about $194,000 of general fund. Notice that there's an addition of 36 positions, 35.07 FTE, coming from other parts of the agency. So this is the total departmental reshoot request. Again, $91.7 million general fund, 171.6 total funds, 100 positions, and 8.4 FTE.
Question?
Just to make sure, thank you, Madam Chair, to make sure I understand, the governor's recommended budget was about $2,216,000,000. The reshoot is a correction of that budget, correct?
That's right, Senator.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking at governor's budget we've been working off that was, through honest errors, caseload changes, was $100 million in the wrong direction plus.
Total funds, again, on line 47, 171.6. General fund, 91.7. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And we got this information, finally, two, three weeks ago?
I don't remember. I'm sorry. But
it's been a fog.
3 or 4 weeks ago.
My point being this.
The day your life stopped, remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My point being, again, it's really difficult for us to come into session and try to work with the department that's this big if we can't get better numbers and get them earlier. And I'm sure the governor feels the same frustration, and I'm sure the department does also. And my understanding is they're taking steps to improve those numbers and are probably going to do much better next time around. But this makes it real difficult to be out there trying to figure out where you're at when you're walking around quicksand all the time. And I think everyone's aware of that, but just want to get it on the record.
Senator Monsanto.
I have to leave, and I wanted to ask some questions now, so I know this might be jumping around the page, but one of them is, but we're jumping in. I want to make sure you're done with the reshoot discussion.
That's
the close-up.
Okay. One, I just have concerns with the COLA delay. I just want to get that on record. The governor's recommended budget had already delayed it 6 months, and we are delaying it another 6 months.
Right.
And these are dealing with workers who have truly been underpaid and are working with the most vulnerable, and the turnover of this staff is so difficult. And that goes with those that are working at Christie School and Trillium, which was in yesterday's budget. And then, of course, today regarding the general fund reduction, I forget which line. It jumps down to line 62. So I just wanted to get that on record. I also am very much in favor of working on trying to get more money into the alcohol and drug programs, into the general assistance programs. And also, I would like to know how much the safety package would cost for Part D, the Medicare Modernization Act safety package. Do we have figures that would tell us what that cost will be for DHS?
Madam Chair and Senator Monis Sanderson, we do, and I will get them to you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Senator Monis Sanderson, I wanted to speak to the delay in the COLAs. We priced that piece in order to try to do a better job of balancing and giving some kind of increase to all of our partners in the whole mental health DHS budget in order for us to keep the COLAs in at all. That was the only way we saw that what we could do it is by extending it in that particular kind of way. I'm the Trillium School is that?
We delayed the COLAs also for those workers. Mm-hmm. Yes. And we discussed that yesterday,
right.
I believe. And I think at least with the delay for those workers, I think they've gone without an increase for 4 years. I'm not sure if there's anyone here.
I know the
4 years.
DD has been the longest people waiting in the COLA line in 4 or 6 years.
And I understand that we don't have the revenue. And I wish we could let the public know the impact of what is happening to our system because of lack of revenue, that it's going to actually hurt our society in the long run by not being able to take care of our workers who are caring for these very fragile individuals. And I realize, I just needed to get on record that these are issues that I truly feel are very important.
We are putting together an initiative or a package for meth, and which means that you cannot help with meth issues without helping across the line with A and B. So we're hoping that that I think John, this is not your budget, you might not remember. I think it's between $8 and $10 million for the meth package, something of that nature. But I'll get back to you on that one.
Okay.
In terms of A and B. Thanks for your question.
Right. Uh-huh.
Good luck.
Madam Chair, I'll continue now with lines 49 through 64. Lines 49 and 50 are the PERS rate reductions and Attorney General rate reductions for this particular cluster. Line 51 is a 2% reduction to services and supplies. Line 52 is a proposal with respect to Package 105, Adult Protective Service Workers, to backfill the general fund in that particular package of $429,000 with other funds revenue from Senate Bill 510. And we would request ASS to unschedule the other funds limitation pending passage of that particular bill. Senate Bill 510 is a moratorium fee or a fee that would be charged for developers who have submitted plans for assisted living projects to this to the department. Line 53 is a co-chair reduction of package within package 110 of the Medicare Modernization Analysts. It eliminates three positions, three FTE. Line 54 is an add back of the Retired Senior Volunteer Program, $250,000, which was a reduction in the governor's budget. Line 55, this is additional general fund for the Oregon Project Independence. So this plus the dollar amount in the reshoot would leave the total at $8.9 million, which is the essential budget level or current service level.
And what did the Senate, what did the House put on this side?
Madam Chair and Senator Bates, the total add back was up to put the level of funding for OPI at $14 million.
But the essential budget level for it with inflation caseload
8.9.
Is 8.9. So to continue the present program is 8.9.
Cool. Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Westman. And taking out the 14 is beyond maintenance of effort, is that right?
Madam Chair and members, the maintenance of effort required for Older Americans Act is about $3.9 million,
right.
And that is taken care of in the reshoot part of
exactly,
the budget.
Exactly. So I wanted to be very clear that it is beyond that. Thank you.
So, well,
go for it.
I'm still catching up. It is currently funded in the Senate budget at 8.9. Do I have that?
Madam Chair.
Could you do 55 again real quickly?
Sure. We added about $6.2 million general fund up above, as I recall, and this adds another $4.9 million. The cut in the governor's budget, it was overcut. There was
$2 million error.
That's right. So this add on line 55 and the one above it of 6.2 gets you to the current service level amount of $8.9 million for OPI.
Okay. Got it. I'm slow, but I get
that. Line 56 is a partial add back with respect to a governor's recommended budget cut, which increased adult foster home rates by about 9%, but decreased assisted living facility rates by about 30%. This proposal would retain the adult foster home rate increase of 9% that's included in the GRB, and it would reduce assisted living facility rates by less than the governor's recommended budget. I asked the department for a proposal that would match this particular net reduction, and what they would propose here is to eliminate level 5 or tier 5 within the assisted living facility rates and move those clients down to level 4 in terms of their reimbursement. This is a reduction in rate from about projected of $1,944 a month down to about $1,575 a month, and it would affect about 30% of the assisted living facility clients.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bates.
Do you have an EBL for these rates? You may not be able to give us one, but...
Well, I can give you the add-back, which I'm not sure is the EBL, though, Senator, but the add-back is about another $2.7 million, or roughly.
It's less than 20 seconds.
But do you know what the effects are going to be of not putting that $2.7 million in?
Other than giving Jim a heartburn.
Well, Jim's heartburn might be my mother or my grandmother not being able to stay where she's living, you know, or somebody else's. Good point, though. Any idea?
I think the concern that was significant with the governor's recommended budget proposal was that some of these were financed through the Department of Housing and Community Services. And I think that this partial add back would help a number of them, but it probably would not help all of them to stay in business. Now, the level or the number of facilities that are at risk, I'm not sure of. This is a proposal that I sent to the department late yesterday afternoon, and I'm not sure that they've had an opportunity to fully examine all the impacts. Okay. So,
thank you.
The next line on line 57 is again the partial add back of a governor's recommended budget elimination of relative adult foster care. This is an add back of $6.7 million general fund, and I believe the total add back to get back to where they project it to be would be about 9.9. So it does not add it all back. Again, the policy direction here from the co-chair is that this would be a reduction in reimbursement to the relative adult foster home providers. The next, on line 58, is a full add back of the governor's recommended budget reduction, which was the adult and people with disabilities waiver cap. About $2.1 million general fund. Up above, we added back $5.5 million general fund. The total reduction in GRB was $7.6 million. So this eliminates a waiver cap in this particular program. Line 59 is an adjustment to add in the Oregon Disabilities Commission. This is consistent with the financial work that my colleague Deborah Manthe did with respect to the Disabilities Commission.
Right.
And we would request DAS to unschedule the limitation pending passage of House Bill 3230, which implements those changes.
Now, that moves both the Disabilities Commission and the Deaf and Hard of Hearing into DAS.
Right.
Or into DHS.
Senator, that's right, into DHS.
And, okay, I'll just leave it there.
You have another question?
Well, does it then, it moves both of them in to DHS. Does it separate them once they're there? In other words, what I'm trying to get at...
No, it does not. But
the Disabilities Commission then still have the money...
But the Disabilities Commission will not... The whole argument was that the Disabilities Commission was using the money that belonged to the Deaf and Hard of Hearing.
Right. Is that...
So that kind of arrangement is basically separated.
All right, that's what I'm getting at. because I'm working with the ODC, who's working with ATC, to maybe create some revenue for ODC.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. Got it.
Line 60 we talked about earlier, and you have some questions on that particular one, but this removes the additional cost of adult or the lack of adult dental because it's being added back in the Oregon Health Plan. $1.7 million general fund reduction, which matches the add in the reshoot. Line 61 is an enhancement to the wages for DD providers of about 5 cents an hour, $1 million general fund. And finally, as Senator Mona Sanderson pointed out, there's an additional 6 month cost of living adjustment delay. This was the number provided to me with respect to the governor's recommended budget back in December, $2.2 million general fund. The subtotal of these other recommended adjustments is on line 63, about $23.8 million general fund, an addition of $67.5 million total funds, two positions, 9.47 FTE. This leads to a total preliminary budget on line 64, $844,216,676 of general fund, $148,327,497 of other funds, $1,462,879,151 of federal funds limitation, $2.4 billion, 2455423324 total funds, 2,070 positions, 1,939.58 FTE.
Comments?
Yes, and John, I have a couple of questions. This budget looks like it's about total funds 10% above the budget for 03-05, maybe 11%, between 10-11%. It's about 5.5% a year. That barely covers inflation. Do you have any idea what the caseload increase has been for this group?
I'm sorry, Senator, I don't have it with me, but I can get it for you for sure.
I assume it's been substantial. Or it's expected to be substantial.
Judging from the increases in terms of the early reshoot lines 2 through, 5 at least, there's significant caseload increases between the governor's recommended budget and this reshoot budget.
My point would be that we've got challenges still inside this budget. I'm particularly concerned about the ALF rates. I think we need to restore those to about $2.7 million. I'm also have concerns about the COLA rates and delaying them. And in the future, in this coming biennium, I believe we're going to have to face the fact that we should expect these people to be coming back to us with the aging population we have, the fact that the aging population is probably going to have more health problems than we can anticipate. We have the Medicaid Modernization Act coming, which we have no idea what it's really going to do to us. We're trying to gear up for it. If these people don't come back with significant rebalance problems a year from now, 6 months from now, I'll be a very happy person. But I expect that's going to happen, and we need to be prepared as much as we can. Madam Chair, as I've committed before, I will give this a yes vote with lots of heartburn, lots of concerns, and I've expressed them as we've gone along, knowing this is not our last bite at the apple. We have a budget we have to reconcile with the House's budget.
Yes.
I have been assured by the co-chair that we'll have an opportunity to bring as much forward as we can. And there's other committee members that disagree with me giving a yes vote to this, but I want to move the process along. But I have confidence that what has been promised to me and our ability to have another bite of this apple is real, and we will have that opportunity.
Well, I'm appreciative of that completely, and knowing that none of us on this committee are really excited about this budget and passing on the kind of costs that we're going to have to pass on to our friends, but at the same time, we've done the best we could within the framework of the dollars that we have. And so
with that in mind. Senator Bates?
Well, Madam Chair, if I could just say something.
You certainly can.
Or I can do it during the discussion phase.
Okay. Let's go through performance measures.
Yeah. Madam Chair, we have one change to suggest to you on one of the five seniors
yes.
and people with disabilities performance measures.
And I thought that was a pretty good performance measure. Do you have a new suggestion? Number 15?
Yeah. This is performance measurement 15.
Mm-hmm.
We only have data, or the department only has data for the persons with disabilities. The actual performance measure is percentage of seniors and adults with disabilities who are re-abused within 12 months of first substantiated abuse. And the actual data for persons with disabilities in 2003 was 6%, and that's where the target for 2006 and 7 is. We brought this forward to the House committee. The House changed the target to 5%, but as they did, they expressed the real hope that the true goal ought to be 0%, but they did change the targets for 06 and 07 to 5%. Rather than the current 6%, and I would recommend that you do so as well.
Comments?
Nope. Madam Chair.
So moved. I would so move.
Senator
Westland.
Any objections?
No, ma'am.
With respect to budget notes, there has been one budget note approved by both Representative Scott and Senator Schrader for seniors and people with disabilities. And it reads as follows. The Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities, in collaboration with the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities, shall convene a work group to review institutional, residential, foster care, waiver, and family support programs that serve children aged birth to 18 with disabilities. The work group shall review eligibility, demographics, funding options, program design, administration, implementation, and best practice. The work group will report to the appropriate interim committee early in 2006 with their findings and recommendations for implementation of a comprehensive, integrated system of services and supports for children with disabilities and their families, including a broad range of options to prevent out-of-home placement whenever possible.
We're going to take action on that. It's just a question.
It is, but we would seek your approval.
Mr. Wesson?
Madam Chair, I think this budget note will go admirably with Senate Bill 819 when we pass that. So I therefore move the budget note as reflected and read by LFO analyst John Britton into Senate Bill 5600 SPD division.
Any objections? I thought you and Bates would be proud of this and she twisted everybody's arm.
Madam Chair, the subcommittee action then for this preliminary budget is, as I outlined it on the spreadsheet, $844,216,676 general fund dollars, $148,327,497 other funds, $1,462,879,151 federal funds, 2,070 positions, 1,939.58 FTE for the seniors and people with disabilities budget cluster.
Thank you. Senator Wesson? I didn't say go crazy. Senator Wesson.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
I move the LFO recommendation of the preliminary budget of $844,216,676 million of general fund, $148,327,497 of other funds, and $1,462,879,151 federal funds, and 2,070 positions, 1,939.5 1.58 FTE for the seniors and people with disabilities budget into Senate Bill 5600 to include the budget note and performance measure as previously moved.
Discussion. Senator Westman.
Madam Chair, looking around at the plethora of members, I would just want to point out that not only, well, I'd just like to point out that the most important word in all of these we have heard and discussed today is reflected on page 3 of 4, line 64, preliminary. I do hope there are, and do trust, there are additional discussions regarding this as well as other very important budgets that this committee will hear.
Senator Westman, we will have to have further discussion with the House and bring our, discuss our numbers, and hopefully we will find the kind of resolution that I know that you, neither Senator Bates, will like, but I think it will be more in line with the direction in which you'd like to see this budget go. But you know how all things are when it comes to negotiations, so we will just hope that we have another shot at this. And I appreciate you for your courtesies, Senator Westman, very much.
You're very welcome, Madam Chair.
Our Senator Bates?
Only comment being, first, a ditto to what the good Senator from Bennett said. Yeah, and despite the rumors you may have heard about civil union between us, it's not occurring.
Okay.
It's off. The jacket didn't fit, so, you know. And I, what I'm hearing is that we are going to have a second bite at this apple. We understand that, and we're adults here. Well, okay. Some of us are. That we're going to have another bite this apple. That we may not get everything we need and we want, but we're going to have a second bite and be able to adjust some of these figures. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I appreciate both of your work and your sincere expressions about getting involved early in this budget. As you know, I'm the one legislator that has been on this committee for 20 years, and so I have lots of heartburn in terms of not being able to serve our most vulnerable to the level I'd like to see it. And I'm very appreciative to our friends that are here that continue to fight and continue to help us to work. And you're helping to keep us as honest as we possibly can in terms of the money that we have to work with. So I want you to know I'm very appreciative of that. And if we had more, you would certainly see me fighting even more to get this budget higher. So I'm appreciative of your understanding very much. And thank you, Mr. Britton, for your hard work and all the questions and that we tend to give you. And I know you're tired of the twins, and I know you're especially tired of me bugging you about can we find some money someplace else.
So yeah, I know he said no to being tired of you. I did not hear him say no about the twins.
So, without objections, we will accept the motion from Senator
Westland.
With no objections on this budget. Also, this committee will stand at ease for about 5 minutes while we have a transitioning between our analysts. Thank you.
through department wide support services and other areas of the Department of Human Services, again with Mr. Britton, and we're glad to have you, Ms. Baker, and so she'll be filling in from time to time.
Madam Chair, the spreadsheet that we've handed out to you now is for your information, and it shows the numbers that you preliminarily approved a week ago last Monday and Tuesday for the department-wide support services part of this budget, as well as the children, adults, and families, the CAF budget cluster for the Department of Human Services. It also shows the health services budget cluster that you approved yesterday, and it also includes the seniors and people with disabilities budget cluster that you approved a few minutes ago. Finally, there is, and we have not talked about this, but there is a capital improvements portion of this budget. You'll see that toward the bottom of your spreadsheet, $1,163,318 of general fund. This is a capital improvement fund for the Oregon State Hospital, Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center, and Eastern Oregon Training Center, and it is also part of this particular budget. We are not recommending any changes to the amount that was included in the governor's recommended budget, nor are there any reshoot adjustments associated with this with these funds.
Any question on that piece, sir, from either of you? Thank you.
You'll see down at the bottom, again, a summary of the amount of funding that was included in the governor's recommended budget that was submitted to the legislature on December 1st, 2004. The agency reshoot adjustments totaling $66.2 million general funds, almost $159 million total funds. You can see the other legislative adjustments, $23.9 million general fund, $44.4 million total funds, and the total DHS budget on the next line. In addition to that particular funding, there is also a special purpose appropriation to the Emergency Board for child welfare staffing and legal representation of $2.5 million. And this is associated with the children's adults and families budget cluster. The conceptual amendments are also included in your packet. They show in Section 1 the general fund amounts for each of these budget clusters, and it also includes, as I said earlier, the capital improvement in subsection 5, and a list in 6, the debt service, which is actually part of the department-wide support services budget that you preliminarily approved last Monday. Section 2 are the other fund expenditure limitations. The long text included in this particular section is a listing of federal funds that are spent in this budget as other funds, and it includes Social Security, Supplemental Security Income Recoveries, the Child Care and Development Fund, which are actually federal dollars that are coming over from the Employment Department, Women's, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program, Infant Formula Rebates, and you can read the other particular federal funds that are spent as other funds in this particular section. Section 3 is the lottery fund expenditure limitation that is in the health services budget cluster related to gambling addiction treatment and prevention, $9.3 million on the second line of Section 3. Section 4 are the federal expenditure limitations for each of the budget clusters. Section 5 of the bill on the back side of the page indicates that the expenditures by the Department of Human Services for Women, Infants, and Children Nutrition Program Food Vouchers, the WIC program, and the federal food stamp benefit payments are not limited. And on our spreadsheets, we've listed those as NL other funds, non-limited other funds, and non-limited federal funds. Section 6 is the amount of tobacco settlement funds in this particular budget, $24.5 million of tobacco settlement, all in the health services budget cluster. Line 7 establishes the special purpose appropriation that I mentioned a moment ago for the children's, adults, and families cluster associated with child welfare staffing and legal representation. This is established within or appropriated to the emergency board as a special purpose appropriation of $2.5 million. And Section 8 is the emergency clause.
Are we amend the bill at this point? You want to amend the bill after you've done the budget notes?
Let's do the budget notes.
That's fine.
The list of budget notes that includes all the text of the budget notes, you have approved all of them except for the first one, which hadn't been approved by Senator Schrader when you worked on the department-wide support services budget last Monday. It has now been approved by Representative Scott and Senator Schrader. It reads as follows. The Department of Human Services, DHS, is directed to work with the State Commission on Children and Families through the Senate Bill 555 Partners for Children and Families Work Group to review and make recommendations for increased community-based delivery of services. This work should focus on early childhood and self-sufficiency, mental health, public health, alcohol and drug prevention and treatment services for children and families. DHS and the Commission are to report to the Emergency Board no later than July 2006 on this work and the findings and recommendations. The other budget notes, as I said, you have already been approved.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would move that we amend Senate Bill 5600 by deleting lines 5 through 18 and inserting sections 1 through 8 in their stead, and that we further conceptually amend Senate Bill 5600 to include the budget notes as presented by LFO on pages 1 and 2 of this document.
Madam Chair, could I clarify that
yes.
motion? The budget notes are not part of the particular bill. Or they're not.
We will delete the discussion I just made of the budget notes then.
The budget notes will be, with your approval, included in the budget report for the bill.
Thank you for that correction. So I would just move that we delete lines 5 through 18 to 5600 and insert sections 1 through 8.
Questions? Discussion? Are there any objections?
Madam Chair, I'd move Senate Bill 5600 to the full Special Budget Committee for the Senate as amended for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Bates moved 5600 to the full committee. Special Committee of the Senate. Any pass recommendation? Any objections?
Could I correct his motion, Madam Chair, just because it's going to a committee that does not exist? It's the Senate Special Committee on Budget, not the Special Senate Committee on Budget.
We stand corrected, as I had just said, to the Special Committee on the Senate.
I would point out, Madam Chair, this is a good reason why we don't have polygamy in this state. I've got one wife at home. Correct me. I don't need a second one up here.
Any objections? So, I should be paid for being the chair in this committee.
Any comments before this committee
is adjourned? It is adjourned.